Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. I still live in the sticks where you wouldn't go, in a town of 1200 off an old dirt road, and a country boy is all I'll ever be.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to the Mountain Man Dan Show. Okay, I've got a couple quick notes here regarding the show, and then we'll go ahead and move on. First off, while I didn't get much feedback on the subject, I did get some feedback on the issue of names being different on the social media platforms, and all the feedback I did get was pushed towards keeping everything the same and going with the Mountain Man Dan Show. So that's what I did for now. On Facebook, the podcast page is called The Mountain Man Dan Show, and it's been linked to my Instagram page, which had been converted to a business page and goes by the same name. I was going to use the Mountain Man Dan on all the social medias, but on Instagram the name was taken, so I added the word show to, you know, everything the same, even though I didn't really want to use the show, since it's a lot more than just a podcast on my social media. You know, it's not just the Mountain Man Dan Show, it's a lot more than that. But anyway, you can now search the Mountain Man Dan Show on most social media platforms, and I should pop up. The only one that is different now is TikTok, because the Mountain Man Dan Show, there was just too many letters, so it's just the Mountain Man Dan on there. But I don't really think, I don't really put much serious stuff on TikTok anyway, and I kind of doubt most of you guys are on TikTok. It's just kind of a time waster. I don't put a whole lot of, like, shooting stuff up there and that kind of stuff, because they tend to take it down. Interjection here real quick. At the time I wrote this script, I was going to change everything to the Mountain Man Dan Show, but I decided to hold off after getting some more feedback. All socials will remain the Shooter's Apprentice for now, including YouTube. I just, personally, I don't like the name the Mountain Man Dan Show, because I don't like the Mountain Man Dan. I prefer the Shooter's Apprentice. I've used it for a lot longer. It has more meaning to me, you know, being a student of the gun, a student of, you know, student of shooting. Versus just a Mountain Man Dan. It just, you know, I go out there, I hunt, I fish. I don't do as much mountain stuff as what I did as a teenager. When I was doing the show with Nick, I used that name to kind of make the show mine than his, you know. But now that I'm doing it by myself, I don't know. I'm not 100% sure where I'm going to go with that. With the rebooting of the show, I'm kind of leaning towards changing everything to the Shooter's Apprentice podcast, and leaving my social media the same, because I've used that name on social media back when I did competitive shooting, back when I did all these other things. I've been known as the Shooter's Apprentice for a long time on different platforms like that. So I'm not 100% sure what I'm going to do there. Just have to kind of figure that one out. On another note, I'm going to start trying to put the episodes on YouTube, starting with this one. So, I don't really have the best setup for YouTube. I don't even have the best setup for podcasting. I keep using that as an excuse for the podcast as well. And on the podcast to YouTube, I just always use it as an excuse. I don't have the right gear. I don't have the right gear. I don't have this. I don't have that. And it just keeps getting shoved back to a back burner, and I just don't keep up with it. And I'm trying to drive myself to get more done lately, instead of just deciding I don't have the right stuff for whatever project I want to do and just not doing it. So I'm going to try to put these episodes on YouTube and maybe start doing some short videos again. You know, I used for gear reviews and whatnot. I used to enjoy doing YouTube videos, although I'll admit the quality wasn't very good. It was something I enjoyed doing. And some of them have gotten pretty good views over the time. You know, it's I've got some of them up in the 250,000 views area, I think. Last time I checked, I don't really get on YouTube that much anymore. So we'll just have to see how that goes. However, as I said before, the YouTube videos will be largely unedited for right now. Part of this is to give you guys kind of a look behind the scenes and see what the bloopers and whatever gets edited out. Kind of a bonus material, if you will. And it also have a lot to do with time to edit, since I'm not ahead on all the episodes right now. Again, I was supposed to record this episode earlier in the week. I'm recording it Saturday. I'm just not as far ahead as I'd like to be right now. So if I want these both to go out Monday, I don't have 4 hours to edit a video. So yeah, so I mean, it'll give you guys a chance. Like, you know, I'm smoking a cigar. I smoke cigars on the show. It'll give you a chance to kind of, you know, see what I'm smoking. and that kind of stuff. Be more interactive if you watch on YouTube. And a lot of people have said they want to see YouTube side of it. So we're going to go ahead and try to do that. Also, the unedited YouTube videos have a little bit to do with... has a little bit to do with licensing issues to add music and stuff like that. On the podcast, I use actual real songs from iTunes, and I edit them directly into the show. And I can kind of get away with this, since Anchor and Spotify are my podcast host. However, I don't really think I'm supposed to publish the episodes anywhere other than Spotify when I use copyrighted music. YouTube is much more strict than podcasting is, and I have been dinged in the past for using copyrighted songs in videos. And when that happens, they usually either take the video down, or at a minimum, I'll get a shadow ban, which is where I can post things, but they just don't get any views. They don't push my videos out to people. Or sometimes if I'm making money on the content and I just lose that funding and the copyright owner gets it. I had that happen one time. I had a video that was making me a few bucks back when I was doing YouTube consistently, and I think it was a ZZ Top song, and boom, they dinged me. I got an email from the whatever their producer is saying that they were gonna take over that show, and they started getting the money I was getting from that episode, which is, it was a few bucks. I don't know why they care for like a $5 video, but you know, they do that. They're a lot more strict than the podcasting is, and I don't make money on any of this stuff right now. I don't make money on YouTube. I don't make money on the podcast. So most likely they would just take the videos down. But so I need to move away from this. Unfortunately, most licensing for real music is crazy expensive. And even using something that was made to be used publicly, you know, I'm looking at around $100 a pop from someplace like Soundstripe or someplace like that. It's about $100 a pop for, you know, and I want the show to be professional, so I want to use good music. I've done some things up on like GarageBand here on the computer and that kind of stuff, and it just doesn't ever sound as good as I'd like it to sound. I'm not a musician. That's not something I do. I used to play guitar as a kid. I don't anymore. Not something I'm good at. And I want the thing to sound good. So for right now, I'm just going to keep what I'm doing. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing for the podcast episodes, and I'm going to leave the YouTube videos more bland and unedited for now, just until I get in a better position and I get things set up the right way. We just got to start somewhere, right? So, now, with all that being said, let's go ahead and get into the show. One would think that by now my wife would know better than to let me venture into the city by myself. But this past week, she did just that. It'd been several weeks since we had gone out for groceries, and it was getting pretty slim pickings around here. You know, I was getting close to spring. I wanted to take the truck so I could haul a load of trash. There's not a dump around here where we live, so you have to haul trash. The closest one's about 25 miles, and it's paid to dump. If I haul it to Fairbanks with me, I can dump it for free. So during the winter, we just kind of let the frozen trash build up. We got an old horse trailer we put our trash in. And then when I get a pickup load, I'll haul it up to Fairbanks and get rid of it. And I wanted to haul a load of trash before it starts, you know, spring's around the corner. It's still cold right now. I'm recording out here in the camper, and it's warmer. I don't have heat in the camper. And I don't know if you guys can tell. If you guys watching the video will be able to tell. You guys can probably see my breath. So, but spring is around the corner, and I wanted to get that trash moved out of here before it starts to thaw out and stink. So, but she doesn't like riding in the truck, since I smoke in there sometimes, and it's not the most comfortable. You know, it's an old work truck. It's got bench seats. And also, the roads are not in great shape with it warming up, and she doesn't like the stress of being on icy roads for several hours to go shopping. So, I loaded up the F-350, and I headed north. And Amanda likes to do the grocery pickups at Walmart and Fred Meyer's and the places she can get away with it. So I don't have to go into the stores on foot, or when we go together, we don't have to go into the stores. We can just pick up, spend 5 minutes, get our groceries, and be out instead of spending an hour in the store. But I had some places that I needed to go. I needed to grab some steel for the plow blade and some other things that I'm working on. And of course, I still have to go through Costco on foot. They don't have a grocery pickup. Actually, I think they do, but they charge for it. So I had to go through Costco on foot. And I got all this done with time to spare before the grocery pickup time, because we usually set that for about when we think we're going to be leaving town, so that way the groceries don't freeze in the truck. And we'll 2 hours drive home, try to keep the groceries you know, as long as we can, fresh as long as we can. Yeah, so, anyway, I had some time to spare before I went to, you know, went to go do the grocery pickups, and I decided to check out a couple of the local gun shops since I had some time to burn, and one of these shops had brand new Glock Gen 3 Glock 19s on the shelf for $419 out the door, and I decided to go ahead and grab one. And of course, I got delayed on the papers, which always happens. Has a lot to do with the family last name and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I got delayed on the papers, and which, you know, like I said, it always happens. So I ran back to the grocery store, got, you know, did grocery store pickups, and when I went back to get the pistol, they had put another gun out there on the shelf, and I don't have it out here with me, but they'd put a, they put another gun on, used gun on the display, and it really caught my eye, and, that was a used but unfired looking Ruger SR 1911 target model 10mm. Now, I've wanted one of these for a long time, and I was really tempted at the price of $699, but I just bought the Glock. I'd already picked up a holster for it while I was waiting for the approval to go pick it up, and I really shouldn't be buying guns right now since I'm not working and the money, you know, the money's a little bit tight. But yeah, so then Mike, the shop owner up there, he told me I can have it for $600 if I took it that day. And yeah, it didn't take much arm twisting. And the next thing I know, I'm walking out the door along with the 10mm and three magazines. And I did this partially because the Springfield just took a crap on me. And I have a bunch of 10mm ammo because the 10mm ammo is available up here and still relatively cheap. So I wanted another 10mm. Once I get the Springfield fixed, I'm just going to sell it. I don't trust it anymore. Not super happy about it. So I wanted another 10mm. To be honest, if I had seen the Ruger the first time I went in there, I probably would have never bought the Glock. However, I was kind of looking for a summer beater gun since the Springfield 10mm was no longer trustworthy. And even if I do get it fixed, I don't think I'm going to trust it again. So yeah, we once again learned that I cannot be trusted and left unattended in places with gun stores and a debit card. Okay guys, I really shouldn't be doing this, but I'm trying to record this episode today in the camper, so it's a little bit quieter, not heated. I do have the power turned on, so I have lights and stuff. And the electrical box in this thing has just a little faint hum to it. Not a big deal usually. Normally it's unnoticeable. But I have a feeling with this microphone it'll be in the background. So we'll have to see how that is. But yeah, I shouldn't be. But I'm recording out here in the camper. And the wife never comes out here. So I'm going to have a cigar today while I record. And it's probably going to become my smoking room for now. I'm going to kind of turn this camper into my recording office until things sort themselves out a little bit better. But I want to, like I keep saying, I keep finding excuses not to do the podcast, not to do the YouTube, and I'm just going to sit down and I'm going to go with it. So we're going to be recording out here in my camper. So I pulled everything out of the humidor this week, and I let my wife pick the cigar for the week to do on the show, and she selected the Tatiana Chocolate. 44 ring gauge Corona cigar. It came with the Tatiana 12-pack. It was a 24-pack sampler, but there was 12 different kinds of cigars in it. I bought that sampler a while back, and I smoked the other cigar that I smoked from that pack on the show. This is the second cigar from that pack. So this is, like most of the Tatiana infused, it's a milder cigar, and this one's a milk chocolate infusion. So far, I haven't found any of the Tatiana cigars I don't like, and this one's no exception. I smoked only the other one out of this pack, but I have had a couple of their cigars in the past. So, when you first put this cigar in the mouth, you know, before you light it, you just, you know, put it in your mouth and get a little taste of it. It has a really, really sweet cap. Well, with a little bit of an artificial sweetener taste. If you ever smoked an acid cigar, you'll know what I'm talking about with that artificial sweetness. It's not bad, but not fully chocolatey. It's more like a chocolate milk, I would say. Like, you know, like when you buy the Nestle pre-made chocolate milks and you shake them up and you get that sweet foam off the top. Kind of like that. Cold draw, I've already lit it now, so you're not going to be able to see me do a cold draw. But the cold draw gives the same sweet chocolate notes. Once lit, that sweetness really mellows out and quite a bit, and it just reveals a really mellow cigar with some, it's almost nuttiness, like a Hershey's milk chocolate bar almost. You can really really catch that nuttiness on a retrohale. So it would definitely be a good cigar for a beginner. Like, if you got a friend that kind of wants to try cigars and they've never smoked a cigar before, you give them a Flathead 660 or something like that, or a CAO America, or any full-body cigar, they're going to not be super happy. This would be a great cigar for a first-time smoker. Even though I prefer full-body cigars, I am thoroughly enjoying this cigar. They go really good with a chocolatey beer or coffee, but I'm drinking this orange Rockstar because I was too lazy to make coffee this morning. I woke up a little bit late and I had a meeting to make, and I jumped in the truck and took off for town, and I grabbed the Rockstar when I was in town. James Yeager once said that all guns should be Glocks. All Glocks should be 9mm, and all Glock 9mm should be Glock 19s. Of course, you guys know me. I scoffed at this idea for years. But I'm starting to realize maybe I was wrong. So, I may be the youngest person alive to have said that the 1911 is the best handgun ever made. I'm not talking about revolvers, I'm talking semi-autos. You know, when I carried a 1911 45 for a long time, I started with a Springfield mil-spec when I turned 21. And then when I started shooting USPSA, I was shooting a Rock Island full-size 1911. And I actually had a Rock Island Commander at that time, too, and I shot those guns both a fair amount. And I shot those guns for about I shot 1911s in USPSA for about the first 2 years before moving to a Ruger SR9. Why did I switch to the Ruger? Basically, because watching and talking to the pro shooters like Kenny Platt, who shot single stack minor, I started to see the advantage of the extra two rounds in the magazine allowed with minor scoring. And as an accurate shooter, there was no real advantage to shooting with the 45 if you're shooting alpha zone anyway. You know, an alpha hits 5 points. If you get a Charlie or a Bravo Delta, then yeah, you get one extra point with the 45 versus a 9mm. But if you're shooting alphas, it doesn't matter. And a fast Charlie is actually better than a slow alpha. It's just the way the game is played. So, yeah, I couldn't afford a 1911 9mm, and I think I got the Ruger for around, I want to say it was like $200 at a pawn shop with like five mags, and I had a holster made for it, and I shot production division, and I started to do really well with it. I shot it better than I did the 1911, probably because lower recoil, but I started to score a lot better with that 9mm. Since I was working with the Mentu mags at the time on social media and doing this and that, and I would kind of advertising with them. I wouldn't call it a sponsorship, but they would send me AR mags, they send me Glock mags and that kind of stuff, and I would do a little bit of advertising for them. And since I was running their mags, and they offered to send me Glock mags, I decided to go ahead and get a Glock so I could run their magazines. And I found a decent deal. I bought two of them. I bought a Glock Gen 3, Glock 22, and then not long after I moved to a Gen 4 Glock 34, which I shot in production for a while, and then I mounted an optic on it, and I moved to carry optic division. And I placed really well with that gun. And I run this gun in a couple of three guns matches, and I did really well with it too, including one time my rifle broke down, and I ended up finishing the rifle part of the course with the pistol, you know, shooting a plate rack at 100 yards, and I still placed in, like, the top half, running the rifle course with the pistol. So I did really well with it. However, I never liked the gun. The gun was actually, it was not legal for competition if I had ever gotten caught. Because I would have been disqualified. Because I put a Zev trigger in it, and I had modified it, but I wasn't happy with the trigger pull. Having shot 1911s and revolvers, I could never get that Glock trigger to where I was happy with it. So I modified that Zev trigger to get it as short as I could with almost no take-up. And the little blade safety didn't work anymore. So, if I would have ever gotten caught with that, it would have been bad. Because I would have been disqualified because the safety feature of the gun is not working. For me, I didn't really care. It's a competition gun. It's a range gun. But yeah, I could never get that 1911 trigger pull out of it. Which will never happen. You're never going to get a 1911 trigger pull out of a Glock. So instead of focusing on the good of the gun, I focused on what I didn't like. And when we moved back up here, I sold all my Glocks because I just don't like them. And I've actually owned several Glocks over the years, including 17, 21, 22, 20, it says 25 here. I think I meant 26. The Glock 34. And I even carried a Model 48 for a while when I was shooting Glocks competitively. And I shot that 48 in a couple of concealed carry matches. And the 48 is the same as a Glock 19, basically, but it's thinner. It's a single stack, I believe. A little 10-round magazine on that. Where the Glock is the 19 is a double stack, 15-round mag. And I shot concealed carry matches with that little Glock 48. But I never liked it, and I never liked them. I never liked the Glocks. I always complained that the grip angle was wrong, that the triggers were terrible, and the finger grooves. You know, the Glocks have finger grooves. I always complain, and they don't. They don't match my fingers. I always complain they don't match my fingers. The grip doesn't fit my hand, and the guns just sucked. And who likes plastic guns anyway? And of course, I've poo-pooed on a 9mm cartridge for years, saying that it's a puny little cartridge, and the 45 is better, and even the 40 Smith & Wesson is better. Modern hall points, you say? Well, those are made for the 45 ACP, too, making it even better! And a 9mm is for women and sissies who can't shoot a real gun. Now, before we continue, I did not write this part into the script, but I'm going to tell you guys a story. And this kind of, was embedded the lack of respect for the 9mm early on in my life. And remember, this story is from the 70s, maybe even more than that, 60s. When we had ball ammo only. So I'm making that note. Ball ammo, 9mm. And I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast before, but there was when I was first really getting into guns, there was this old guy I used to know. His name was Harb. And he was a Vietnam vet, old school, tough guy. I mean, this guy, you did not mess with this guy. Marine, tattooed, just one badass dude. And real grumpy old guy, but we know he liked guns, I like guns, so I'd go talk to him sometimes. And I remember I picked up, it was a Glock 26, my first Glock, my first 9mm. And I brought this gun to Harb, and I show it to him, and he picks it up, he's looking at it, and he goes, he didn't use these words. I try to keep this show PG, PG-13 maybe. He did not use the PG-rated words he used, but he goes, "Is this a freaking 9mm? And I go, "Yeah." And he slams that gun down on the table, and he rips open his shirt, and there's like four or five, I would say it was like seven or eight, but there was several, probably four or five good scars on his chest. And he goes, "This was a gosh dang 9mm, and I still kicked his ass." And, you know, as a young man, you know, 19 maybe, maybe 20, it left an impression in my mind that the 9mm don't get the job done. And the story with him was he was screwing the guy's wife, and the guy walked in on him and put a few bullets in him with a 9mm, and he survived it. But like I said, you know, modern hollow points, all that kind of stuff. So, all that being said, I still believe this to an extent where I currently live. I have carried a 9mm in the past, and I think that for most social work, it is fine. Modern ammo, like the Hornady Critical Duty, I don't have a box out here, but it's pretty good stuff, and there's a lot of other good modern hollow points on the market. I personally choose, and I carry the Hornady in my guns because I have tested it extensively, and I tested several others. I started when I was carrying a 1911, I tested the Hornady, and I tested a bunch of others, and the Hornady performed the best in a 45. And I've just kind of stuck with this ammo in other calibers, and I've tested it in other calibers, and it's always done exactly what it's supposed to do. Every time. Hornady also has their critical defense line, which is a little lighter, which is what I get my wife for her 38 special. But the critical duty is designed to pass all the FBI barrier tests, and it's usually a plus P loading with heavier bullets, and I like that. You guys know I like heavy for caliber bullets. Always have, probably always will. However, I still think the 9mm is a little bit light in the pants for Alaska. And even in town, there's always that chance of having to put down a moose or a bear. And will the 9mm work for that? Yeah, absolutely. And there's even, you know, heavy outdoorsman loads available for the 9mm. And as a matter of fact, there was an Alaskan fishing guide, it was hunting guide, fishing guide, whatever he was doing at the time. I know the guy's name, why can't I think of it right now? Shoemaker, Phil Shoemaker. He dropped a Charging Grizzly with a 9mm and Buffalo Boar ammo. But I don't think the 9mm is a great choice for it. But, to be honest and fair, I don't really think the 45 ACP is the best for this either. But I would rather have the 45 in my hand than a 9mm in a heavy defense situation like that. But then again, I'd rather have a 44 mag than a 45 ACP. But, you know, wants in one hand, you know, and, you know, in the other. So, yeah. So, I think that 9mm is a great choice for the regular Joe whose biggest concern is having to deal with a robber, you know, while getting a cup of coffee at the convenience store or whatever in the morning. Most of the 9mm guns hold more ammo than a 45 or 10mm. And with the development of these the subcompact guns that have come out the last few years, like the Sig 365 and that kind of stuff, some of the pocket guns, you know, guns I can fit in the palm of my hand, hold more ammo than a full-size double-stack 45 does. You know, most double-stack 45s are 10 rounds, with the exception of the FNX 45. That's a 15-round magazine. That's an impressive gun. And I like the FNX. I had one. I sold it. I regret it. I'd like to have another. But yeah, I mean, modern 9mm have come a long way. It's these small guns, you can hold 15 rounds of ammo in them, you know? Or 10 rounds. I think 10 and 12 rounds is common now, but yeah. And all this brings us back to the Glock 19. One thing I'm still not a fan of is small guns. Like the little pocket pistols I just mentioned. While I can see the advantage for concealed carry and other, you know, and better concealment and all that, I still think you should be able to carry a gun you can shoot well. And for me, that is something that I can get a good grip on. A couple years ago, I would have said it needed to have a great trigger too. But I think a good grip is more important than a good trigger now. However, you pair a bad grip with a bad trigger, and that's a perfect recipe for inaccuracy. My accuracy standards are a little high, I suppose. What are my accuracy standards, you ask? Great question. I personally think you should be able to consistently keep all your shots on a 12-inch plate at 50 yards or a full-size silhouette target at 100 yards. And this might seem a bit extreme to some folks, but I believe in placing shots where you need them every time. And this is the standard by which I measure myself and my carry guns. If I can't shoot a gun well, I won't carry it because in the heat of the moment, I need something that I can hit what I'm aiming at. You know, I'm not an exceptional pistol shot. I'm an average pistol shot. You know, I've practiced a lot. In the heat of the moment, I don't want any extra stress of not being, well, I can't shoot this gun very well. I don't know if I'm going to be able to hit this guy. No, I want to know I can shoot the gun well. So, when I first walked into that gun shop last week, the first Glock I picked up was actually a used Gen 3 Model 19. But I picked it up just because I like handling used guns. I didn't pick it up because it was a Glock and I wanted a Glock. I'm just looking through the used gun rack. I ended up buying a new one because of the price. I think the used one was $399 and it came with one mag, P-Mag, and the new one was $419 out the door with two factory mags. I actually had no intention of buying another Glock. I don't like Glocks. But I picked it up because, like I said, I like to check out used guns, and I was amazed at two things. Number one, I used to complain about the grip angle on the Glocks. You know, you look at a Glock, got this hump in the back here. It gives it a more deep grip angle. I used to complain about the grip angle on the Glock, saying I'm used to 1911s, and sure, anyone can learn to shoot any gun, but they have sights for a reason, but the Glock's never pointed right for me, right out of the holster, you know, if I'm just coming up for a quick shot, you know, at least not several years ago when I last had one. When I picked up this Glock 19, I even tried a 17 and a couple other guns in the store, and when I bring it up, the sights are on target. And I don't know if this is just muscle memory from me shooting them in USPSA or what, or if I was just getting bent out of shape in the past because I didn't want to like Glock. I didn't want to like them. They're not steel. They're not American made. They're just crap. But it's a non-issue for me at this point. The gun points and aims how I want it to. The other big thing for me was the trigger. I've always hated Glock triggers. I modified an aftermarket Glock trigger to the point of making it illegal for competition because I didn't like the trigger. And I've talked a lot of smack about Glock triggers and the guns themselves. I'm starting to think maybe I was just being a little stubborn and I wasn't giving them a fair chance. Predetermined to dislike them, if you will. The Gen 3 Glock that I have right now is stock, and the trigger isn't great. It's a Glock trigger. Has a lot of take up, and then, a heavy squishy pull from there. Not like all the Glocks do. But for whatever reason, when I was handling this gun in the store, it didn't bother me. And even now that I've shot a couple hundred rounds out of it, it still doesn't really bother me. In other words, I don't hate it. Sure, it could be better, but it's usable. I can work with this. And I actually put a video up on Instagram the other day of shooting empty 9mm cases at 20 yards. I can work with this trigger. So I don't know if my opinion on the trigger has changed because I've shot a lot of things other than 1911s and Ruger 22s and revolvers at this point in my life. Or maybe I'm just being less stubborn than I used to be and willing to give it a fair chance. But I can work with this trigger. And it's not that this gun has a better trigger than other Glocks. I tried a dozen in my shop and they all felt the same. But for whatever reason, it doesn't bother me as much as it used to. Couldn't tell you why. Because I haven't had a Glock in the last few years. I haven't been shooting Glocks and getting used to the triggers. I have had a Springfield that was Striker fired. I've had, my FN22 doesn't have the best trigger and that kind of stuff. Maybe I've just gotten more use to the triggers. But the Glock trigger doesn't bother me as much as it used to. So, why out of all the models of Glocks did I go with the Glock 19? It's simple. I got it to be a potential carry gun. And even though I've been biased against Glocks in the past, I can't sit here and honestly say I've ever had one that didn't work. When I was shooting competitively, if you go back and watch my competition shooting videos, you will see some failures with that Glock 34. And they were all magazine related from aftermarket magazines. And cheaper aftermarket magazines that we're not going to name again. I actually wrote a short post review on my Facebook on this gun, saying at the Glock, it goes bang when you pull the trigger, the end. I intended this to be funny, but it's true. Glocks are well known for this. They're well known for being dependable. Dirty, whatever. You pull the trigger, they go bang. Why the 19? Because I feel that the 17 is too big for a true concealed carry gun. The 1911 is easier to conceal, I think. So the 17 is a big gun. So, why not a Glock 26? Even though I got used to the short grip on the Springfield XDM I was carrying, the 26 does not offer enough of a grip for me without magazine extensions, and at that point, I might as well just go with the bigger gun. With the XDM, it just fit my hand in such a way that it locked into place, so that the heel of the gun locked into the cup of my hand right here, and it just locked into place, and I could shoot it well. And this was just not the case with the short grip Glocks. They are too small for my hand. The 19 offers enough grip, and I can grab the gun here again and show you guys, for you guys watching YouTube. I can get my full hand on that grip. And, magazine loaded, we're not going to load the gun. I can put the magazine in the gun without changing my grip. So this was not the case with the short grip Glocks. They're just too small for my hand. Even though the Springfield 10mm, my pinky was underneath the magazine, forcing me to change my grip to reload the gun. From the top of the slide to the bottom of the trigger guard, on the Springfield, it's almost exactly 3 inches. While the Glock is only 2.6 inches, so almost a half inch difference. And the grip from the trigger, bottom of the trigger guard, to the bottom of the magwell on the Springfield is 1.64 inches, and the Glock is 2.3 inches. So with the magazine inserted, the Glock is overall about a quarter inch taller than the Springfield. and allows for full grip on the grip frame. Like I said, the grip frame in there, I can take the magazine, I can put the magazine in the gun without changing my grip. So, I know the Glock's a 9mm and the Springfield is a 10, and unlike the Glock, all the Springfield XDs are the same frame size, so the 10mm is the same size as the 9mm would be. You know, I'm talking about the measurements here. The Springfield 10, the 9mm would be the same size as a Springfield 10mm. So why a Gen 3? Simple. The price. $419 out the door. I mean, come on. The Gen 5 is close to $200 more than that. But what about the finger grooves? You know, you're right. They don't fit my hand. I can show you guys watching YouTube. You can see the finger grooves. The tips of the finger grooves, you know, the peaks of them land almost center of my fingers. They don't fit my hands. I used to bitch consistently about the finger grooves, and I even ground them off on my other competition Glocks. And they just don't seem to bother me anymore. They don't hurt when I shoot the gun, so why should I really care? Oh, but wait. Gosh dang it, I'm a lefty. The Gen 3 doesn't have ambi controls. The Gen 5 does. The Gen 4 would have an ambi magazine release. You're right. The Gen 3 does not have ambi controls. And this is something a lot of guns don't have. And at this point in life, I have gotten so used to hitting the magazine release with my trigger finger. Just like that. You guys on video, YouTube, you know, finger, trigger finger, magazine release. I've just gotten so used to doing that on all guns that I don't use the ambi mag release on guns I have that do have it. And the same with the slide stop. If the slide locks back, I just, you know, I grip it and rip it. I get back in the action. I have shot this way for years, and the ambi controls really don't change the way I shoot. So, for me, it's kind of a mute point, with the exception of a safety on a gun that has one like a 1911. Glock doesn't have a safety. It's a non-issue. So, what's the point I'm trying to make here? Well, this is hard to say, but I might have been wrong. I don't like to be wrong. But sometimes a guy has to admit he allegedly might have been wrong. And I was maybe kind of sort of wrong about the Glocks. I may have just chose to be stubborn and decided Glocks sucked and I didn't like them. Sure, I still prefer a 1911. But that doesn't mean that the Glock is junk or useless. With all that being said, I'm even kind of looking forward to giving this Glock 19 a fair chance, and you don't know, I may even end up liking the goofy thing. Okay guys, this week's gear review is a little different. It is a gear review, but most of you guys probably will never do business with this company. If you do, tell Kevin I sent you. But no, this week's review has more to do with the use of the product than the actual product. So, when I picked up the Glock, I needed to grab a holster for it. And I checked around the stores, and no one in Fairbanks had a left-handed holster for a Glock 19 in hand, or on hand. And as a matter of fact, the only Glock 19 holster I found was a Serpa in this eel. No thank you. And as much as I love Rob Leahy and Simply Rugged Holsters, I am an impatient man. I'm very impatient. I don't like to wait. And I wanted a holster now. So, since I was waiting for the paperwork to get approved on the gun still, I called 40 Below Holsters in Fairbanks, Alaska, and asked how long their wait time was. And to my surprise, he said he had a pre-made left-handed inside-the-waistband holster for a Glock 19 on hand that they accidentally made backwards. And I went and grabbed it. So, this holster is a two-piece Kydex. Pancake style with the belt clips on each side. You know, instead of one in the middle, you see the one in the middle a lot of times with Kydex holsters. This one has two. And I like this a lot better than the single clip. And, you know, I've tried the single clips with the wings. I don't like the wings. I don't carry appendix. The wing is helpful for appendix. I don't really find it that helpful for hip carry. And it's also built to be tuckable. These clips on here allow for you to tuck your shirt behind them. Yeah, and overall, the holster, it's really well made. You know, it's got nice, smooth lines. Everything looks really nice. It fits the gun really well. And it offers double retention screws. You know, really nice clips on them. So, good belt, and it locks the gun to the belt. And it's very secure. The double clips Also, they have a little bit of canth adjustment in there, but I'm just leaving it straight up and down for now. Now, I'm not a fan of inside-the-waistband holsters, especially with Kydex. And it might be where my distaste for Kydex comes from. I'm a bigger guy. I'm 6'10". I'm 330 pounds. Might be a little more now, but this winter I'm getting a little extra fluffy. And I've never found an inside-the-waistband holster that I found comfortable. With outside-the-waistband, I wear the gun pretty much right at 9 o'clock. I'm left-handed. 9 o'clock, with the muzzle pointed right, pretty much right down the seam of my pants. A few years ago, when I tried a few different inside-the-waistband holsters, I really don't like appendix carry. And now that I'm a little bigger around, I'd probably dislike it even more. Especially since I spend most of my days sitting in a cab when I'm working. You know, guns don't fold. They just sit that end of your gun right into your belly all day when you're sitting in a cab running a bumpy piece of equipment. No thank you. However, I've always tried to wear the inside-the-waistband holsters in the same position I would wear an outside-the-waistband holster. And I found it to be uncomfortable with the gun and the holster jamming into my thigh. You know, the tip of the holster right here just jamming into my thigh, especially when I'm sitting. And this is true even with leather holsters. I've tried a few different guns, a few different holsters over the years, and the results are all the same. I just didn't like inside-the-waistband. However, I was discussing this with a friend, and he suggested moving the holster back on my hip to about the 8 o'clock position. Maybe 7:30. And I'll be dang if that doesn't work. At first, I really didn't like the idea of moving the holster back because I see myself as a little bit of a gunslinger, and moving the holster back means a little bit slower draw. From inside the waistband, the draw is virtually the same. You know, you move it back a little bit. Yeah, you're reaching back a little bit further to grab the gun. Big deal. It's never going to be as fast as a good outside the waistband setup, but how fast do we really need to be? I'm not out here quick shooting and quick drawing and shooting people from the hip in the street, you know, like the old cowboy days and that kind of stuff. Trade off a little bit of speed for all-day comfort and concealability, and I think that, my viewpoint is changing on this. I've always been kind of, I want the gun out there, I want to get that gun fast. I'm starting to think maybe that the concealability and comfort might be worth the trade-off. One of the reasons I've always worn outside-the-waistband holsters, I can wear it directly on my hip, fast access to the gun, and be comfortable. But they don't conceal that well. Even the Simply Rugged Pancakes, what's the one for the pistols? The Cuda? For semi-auto, there's still some printing there with the grip and all that. It's an outside-the-waistband holster. And the gun extends past the belt line, so you have to wear a longer shirt, to cover it. I'm 6'10". I don't get longer shirts. So I was really surprised that moving the gun backwards, it made sitting more comfortable. You'd think the gun a little bit further back on your hip, almost back to my back pocket, I'd be sitting on the gun. But no. I've been driving the truck, I've been getting firewood, I've been doing all these different things, and it doesn't really bother me. Sitting is fine, and I don't even really notice the gun's there when I'm sitting. Now, there are companies out there that claim that they make holsters that'll work on sweatpants and stuff without a belt. I still believe in a good belt is needed to carry a gun, and I'm rocking a 1.75 inch Simply Rugged Real Man's belt, and it is a fantastic gun belt. I wear it every day. So, anyway, yeah, I'm going to give this setup a try for a while with this Glock 19. I like the idea of better concealment since technically I'm not supposed to carry at my job. Alrighty, guys. Well, I'm going to go ahead and get this one wrapped up. Trying to record this episode and next week's back-to-back and get ahead on the episode, so it may be a couple shorter than usual episodes. Like this one. When I wrote the script, I did not expect this one to be 50 minutes of recording time. This is way longer episode than I expected writing this script out. And that's something I'm learning about writing scripts. Episodes, I think, this is a small subject. This isn't going to go very long. Goes big. And when I do subjects like the 22 episode where I put in all this data and all this stuff and I get like 39 minutes of time, it's like, whoa. So I'm still kind of learning this new format. I was hoping to record this episode Wednesday or Thursday. I'm recording it Saturday, and as soon as I get done with this one, I'm going to start the script, and I'm going to try to record the next week's episode tonight or tomorrow. But I need to get a little bit ahead, and that will give me more time to start working on the YouTube videos as well, and try to make those better. You know, you guys have noticed, you guys have commented how much better the podcast editing has become over time, And I want, no, the YouTube's going to be the same way. It's going to be rough starting out, but we'll get there. It's going to be good. So, next week, we will most likely be talking about the Ruger SR 1911 10mm. I'll be giving my thoughts on that gun, the cartridge, and the platform. And I know we just recently did a 10mm episode, but this is a better 10mm. I've wanted this 10mm for a long time. I like 1911s. Really excited about this gun. And I'm trying to keep fresh content for you guys. There's only so many things I can talk about and doing weekly content. Plus, it's something I can do back-to-back to try to get ahead on episodes. So next week, we are probably going to be talking about that Ruger 1911. So, as always, I welcome any feedback from you guys. Feel free to send me an email at dansgunstuff@gmail.com or look me up as The Shooter's Apprentice on most social media platforms. I said early on I was going to change those to The Mountain Man Dan Show. It just doesn't sit right with me. I like The Shooter's Apprentice better. I've been that guy for so long on social media. I feel like changing my, what's the word I'm looking for? Alias? That's not really the right word. It's not a personality, but yeah, just changing my social media presence and changing that name will not be the best. So I'm not sure if I'm going to rename the podcast yet. I'm thinking about renaming the podcast to the Shooter's Apprentice Podcast, you know, but it's all about learning guns and that kind of stuff. You know, yeah, we talk about things other than guns, but I am the Shooter's Apprentice. I'm the one that talks about those things. I'm not sure yet. We'll just have to kind of see how it goes. But anyway, yeah, you guys can send me an email at dansgunstuff@gmail.com. Or you can look me up on the social media platforms and engage there. You know, send me messages on there if it's easier. I'm still thinking about setting up that texting phone number, and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, go check me out on social media. Be sure to give me a follow. I'm working with a couple of companies right now, getting ready to try to do, it's not really sponsorship, more like an affiliate program, where I can start getting you guys some discounts for products I review on the show, you know, this, that, and the other. And I need to expand my social media presence in order to meet some of these guys' requirements for what they want to see. All right, guys. So we're going to go ahead and get this one wrapped up. Until next time, stay safe out there and don't shoot yourself in the foot.
Same nail too long. My ears can't stand to hear the same old song. And I don't leave the highway long enough to bog down in the mud. 'Cause I've got rambling fever in my blood. I caught this rambling fever long ago when I first heard it.